thanks for coming very early, being on time. Over to you, Mr. Mathur.
Thank you, Sir President. I want to also apologize on behalf of my chapter committee. It's my representative who was also occupied. I also want to apologize on her behalf. She was home to accompany me. I did not bring any other executives because there's also some work that they are doing on the head office, and we wanted to also cut the cost. But thank you for welcoming. My presentation will cover six issues. I will go through the definitions. I've made the definitions because there are some words that may not be understood by the committee because they are not using them frequently. I'll also look at the policy gap analysis and the reason why some of us established, just an overview. I will also look at the mandate and how this mandate of SAMAC is aligned with the DTI objectives and also with the government objectives. And then I will just go through the funding that we have received for the past 3 years to date and how we have used that funding, how we have utilized the funding. And then I will just go into the performance highlights per province around the issues of the district network, the office network, the disbursements to each region and the number of financial intermediaries, savings and borrowing. Then I'll deal with the challenges and the action plans that we've implemented for the challenges. The definitions that we are going to see in the presentations are those ones. So those are the meanings in full and of the short word that we've used there. I want to start with the rationale for establishing SAMAC. In 2005, there was a policy review that indicated that there was a financing gap for those who are enterprising poor and working poor, survivors, business and hardcore. And if we look at the graph on the left-hand side, we'll find that the hardcore are at the bottom of the pyramid and the very poor, survivors, enterprising poor are in the little bit up and the economically active poor are a little bit up. Those are the kind of gap, financing gap that was identified at the time. The financing gap starts from around 100 rand because such people need an amount of 100 rand up to 10,000 rand to start to grow and to expand their businesses. So, but it was not feasible for a government trading entity, which we are, to lend directly to these enterprising poor, as they have certain particular risks in terms of mobility. They move around quite quickly, they are volatile, they have got credit risk, and for instance, you'll find that they live here and they go to Zimbabwe to take some stock and come and sell it here. So it was not possible that then a trading entity should start with retailing to them. So hence it was decided that it should be a wholesale lender. It was therefore considered the viable method, as I say, was to encourage these enterprising poor, these very poor survivalists, these hardcore destitute, to either establish their own savings and lending vehicles to deliver financial services to themselves in terms of loans and deposits. It was further emphasized that there will be existing developmental microfinance institutions that are already playing in the sector, like your WDP, your Small Enterprise Foundation, your Marang and others, that should play the role of lending to these survivalist enterprising and working poor communities, because they have already been doing that job. We are therefore established then in terms of Section 38(1)(m) of the PFMA REDS, together with Section 76(4)(b) of the PFMA of the DTI. So we are a trading entity of the DTI. However, as I said, we are a wholesale fund which supports the development of these financial intermediaries, namely the financial service cooperatives and the microfinance institutions. We also support, which I have not written there, we also support the saving schemes and saving initiatives that need to be formalized into financial service cooperatives. That's our role, that's our mandate. So therefore, we provide loans and grants for institutional capacity and technical support to these institutions. Loans are provided for on lending to the enterprising poor. That was the rationale for forming SAMAF, and that's where the mandate is derived from. This mandate, therefore, of SAMAF, which is to contribute to government poverty reduction goals by acting as a catalyst in the development of this microfinance sector in South Africa, is to support the establishment of these MFIs, as I've said, to reach deeper and broader into the enterprising poor and working poor communities, facilitate the establishment of sustainable microfinance intermediaries, and build a strong and effective, efficient wholesale APEX fund, which is SAMAF. It's aligned, therefore, to the government goals and objectives of creating work, eradicating poverty, and reducing inequalities, and expanding opportunities for all. That there is a clear alignment with what SAMAF is doing, therefore. The mission is there to provide developmental microfinance and to do all those things that I shepherded through you. I'm not going to read them through, but there is an alignment again with the government objective of mainstreaming and aligning developmental microfinance to alleviate poverty, to reduce unemployment, to create jobs, and to also foster entrepreneurship, just that ensuring decent work, and that is also an alignment with government objective. For the past 3 years to date, because we started in 2006, that's when we were launched, that's when we were established, we have been funded in that particular way. GTI gave us 130 million in 2006, in 2006-2007. We also generated interest income from the loans that we were lending. And that's how we've used the funding. Operational expenditure was 25 million. Transfers that we made to the financial intermediaries was 19 million in total. And so we had unutilized funds that we kept as a surplus in the book. In 2007-2008 we received 83 million from DTI. We also earned interest from the loans and also from the way we invested the funds. That is from the bank interest that we invested the fund, and then we add that interest. And that interest was also used to refinance the business. And also in 2009, we received only 38 million from DTI. And then we also earned interest of 15 million, and that's how we've used the fund. The issue that I want to emphasize on this is the transfer of funds to the financial intermediaries. As I said, in 2006-2007, we transferred 19 million. In 2007-2008, we transferred 24 million. In 2008-2009, we transferred 12.7 million. So in total, we've transferred 57 million. I will explain why we've been having difficulties in terms of transferring the funds quite quickly to financial intermediaries. It will come when we deal with the challenges. The number of employees have been increasing, because in 2005 we were 45 and then 55 and now we are 60. In terms of our structure, we are supposed to be 75, but we've been resisting the issue of just employing people in order to increase our numbers to 75. We say we can still do this business with 60 people so that we become efficient rather than employing people for incurring unnecessary expenditure. The number of FIs have also increased from 31 to 42 to date, and the number of borrowers increased from 4,346 to 47,258 to date. In fact, 68, I think that figure is wrong. I also explained that the administration expenses may look high, but they include rent, lease expenses for all the 9 provinces, including the SAMAF head office, because we also pay rent at the head office. It includes the setup cost for new offices and replacement of computers and other equipment when we establish the offices, and every time we renew computers and other equipment. So it's not an administration expense just to pay salaries. It includes all those things. The employees also increased, as I say, from 45 to 60 to 80. Loan loss provisions and impairment increased substantially if we look at in 2008 due to high delinquency and some closures of financial intermediaries that we had funded. I was just giving a picture of where we I'm putting this picture to show that this picture is the actually our beneficiaries, the people that have benefited from the program. That's the kind of people we are mandated to work with. That's our business. Those are the people that we live for. That's why we exist. We exist to actually support those women that are doing business there. Now, I put a national footprint and outreach network on a province by province, but also district by district level. In the Eastern Cape, we've got four financial intermediaries that we supported. We put even the people that are contact persons, and the district is Matole, Nelson Mandela Metro, Amatama, and OR Tambo. So we are represented there. Some of these institutions, we'll see when we go to challenges, that some of them are struggling and are closing down, and there are challenges that I will go through. In the Free State, we have one institution in Thabo Makgotlanyane. In Gauteng, we've got about six institutions, and in various districts also. In KwaZulu-Natal, we've got four institutions, in Ugu, Thukela, Sisonke, Mkhanyakude. In Limpopo, we had about seven institutions, in Sekhukhune, Waterberg, Vembe, and Capricorn. In Mpumalanga, we had four institutions, in Kangala, Hertzberg, Steve Chwete, and Emalahleni. In Northwest, we had Ngakamotiri, Mulema, Blackstock, Ramachere, Maloa districts, and Bonajal. And in Western Cape, we have institutions in Cape Town Metro, Mpumalanga, Philippi, Strand, Tygerberg, Kokolet. Our strategy was to really make sure, or as much as possible, expand these financial services deep into the local municipalities that are quite rural, so that people can access these financial services and manage their own business and these financial intermediaries themselves. And I will also go through some challenges as to why we've managed to do that, but not to the extent to which we are only 3 years chairperson, so I also want to always put that on the national footprint and outreach on a province by province basis. As I said, we've got nine offices that are existing. We are also starting to set up satellite offices on a province by province. The only province that we have not talked about a satellite office is Northern Cape, Northwest, and Gauteng. I know that I will get questions as to why, but Gauteng is a province that is well resourced, and we don't think that we should really create more extended offices for it. We think we should take resources more to the deep poverty stricken provinces and districts. The reason for Northern Cape is that we are still building the business from scratch, and we are driven by the extent of business, that then we should create another satellite, because it's costly to add a satellite office when we are not going to get a demand. That is the same thing that is in Northwest. The money that we've dispersed on a province by province basis is that in Limpopo, as in March, we dispersed 5.4 million, Mpumalanga 12.4, Eastern Cape 3.1, KwaZulu 2.5, Gauteng 18.4, Western Cape 6.2, Northern Cape 2.1, Free State 500,000, and Northwest 1.9. Those are the results as at March, and that picture has actually shifted. And the question is, in Gauteng we dispersed 18 million. Where we are also saying Gauteng is not really a poverty stricken. We will see the figures in the next financial year that picture changes actually. We've shifted the resources to provinces that are poverty stricken, like Limpopo, Mpumalanga. We're shifting to KZN, we're building KZN, we're also building Eastern Cape. And that's where the resources are more needed than in Gauteng. But so far, for the past 3 years, that's how we've done. The savings and borrowers per province are as what I'm showing there. We had a portfolio of 912 borrowers in Western Cape, in Northwest, in Western Cape 3,000, in KZN 138, Free State. So we've not done much. I'm messing up now. 912, Chairperson, let me start from scratch. Northwest is 900 for all us. Western Cape 2900, all the way down. The reason why we had a big number in Mpumalanga is because we were able to fund a very big MFI, or financial intermediary, WDB, there. And so it brought big numbers because it's a big MFI. So it reached out to a big number. The reason in the Eastern Cape that we got low number is because we had funded small FSCs that did not have a broad outreach. And we are building that now. We've changed that picture, and which will be better in the next financial year. In the Northern Cape, we only funded one MFI, which we thought is going to give us about 3,000, but there's been problems. So we are rebuilding and resuscitating that MFI in order to for better outreach than the 180 people. But in total, all those numbers come up to 47,258, and we are going to improve those numbers in the next financial year. The challenges that are common, and I decided to consolidate the challenges, they come from different provinces, but they are actually quite common, is that as we noticed, there's a slow take-up of funds from financial intermediaries due to these financial intermediaries not meeting financial and reporting requirements as per Section 38 of the PFMA. We have to, we are governed by this section, and we can't disperse funding without making sure that financial systems of control are there and people are reporting and accounting. And even when we support them and assist them, we also have to be careful of not doing things for them. They must actually, after we've shown them how to report, they must report back to us. But it takes a long time for people to learn these things. There's also a problem of some own members and boards actually defrauding their own institutions. And we've taken some of them actually to forensic audit, and some are going to go to court actually for defrauding their own members in their own institutions, because these are not some of institutions, they are run by their own boards. So there have been some instances like that. There's a decline of the member savings, and that is not necessarily a problem caused by themselves. There are economic factors there. Because of the retrenchments and the financial crisis that is happening, obviously the remittances that come from the urban areas, that is from the urban working class, going to the rural areas and households, has actually declined. So those people don't have excess liquidity or excess savings that they can put in their own institutions. So in a nutshell, the financial crisis has also affected the working poor and enterprising poor communities. And I want to take note that we don't see any package actually for the enterprising poor, but that's a different point. Unreliable and inaccurate information, which require intensive verification. We get information from these MFIs or these financial intermediaries, and we want to verify and make sure that is accurate before we further disperse or we further use those reports. That takes a long time, and it also prevents them from actually getting their funds on time. There's inadequate financial controls and financial systems which are not aligned to general accounting practices and the international financial standards, because we are governed by those standards ourselves as SAMAF, so we have to impose those standards. We've got to assist people to comply with those standards. We train people to do that, but the implementation of what we're training sometimes take a long time to take effect. There's non-compliance of statutory requirements like the National Credit Act. There's also an exemption notice for deposit taking that we are using, and people have to comply with that. They've got to restart their own constitutions. They've got to have AGMs in the cooperatives. They've got to have their reports. All those things are required, and it takes a long time for people to comply. Poor financial planning and management leading to reckless lending methods. Sometimes we disburse funds and the funds are not properly lended, and so funds are not coming back to the same institutions that we are lending to, and therefore it affects our own repayment rate. Misuse and poor handling of funds, that's a general problem. Also poor member and borrower loan repayments leading to high default rate, that's a problem. conflict and mistrust amongst the FI membership and board, that's creating operational instability. Those are some of the problems we picked up, because institutions will come to us and things are honky-dory when we fund them and the board is working and the member. Once we put money, then there starts to be conflict, instability, mistrust, and other members, as I said, defraud the institution, and the board members defraud their own members. So it's a problem that we are working with. Absence of deposit insurance scheme indemnity cover for financial intermediaries less than 1 million. Chairperson, if I may be allowed to just take 2 minutes to actually explain this. The Cooperatives Act, the Cooperative Bank Act of South Africa, which has just been promulgated in 2004, gives power to the agency to regulate the sector, which is fine. But then the Act also says the insurance deposit cover will not be provided for small deposit taking and savings mobilizing institutions that have got assets that are less than 1 million and with a membership of less than 200. We think that's a policy gap, Chairperson, because if we are developmental and we want to be developmental, you can't have commercial banks having insurance deposit schemes to protect the depositors' money, and you have the cooperative banks having deposit schemes to protect the depositors. But then when it's a working and enterprising poor deposit, they are not protected by any insurances. We think it's a very huge gap, and then it doesn't augur well for a developmental agenda of the country. So that's why it therefore discourages the small institutions, the savings schemes, the stock firms, the FSCs, financial cooperative, to actually move in this area and mobilize savings with a view that those savings are also protected if anything goes wrong. That's the problem, it's a big challenge. The provinces did not meet their service delivery targets in 2008-2009. That's making SAMAF not to meet its targets. I have shown there in the picture of SAMAF funding how our funding, how we have underspent in terms of our funding and transfers to financial intermediaries. We've dealt with issues of non-performance and poor performance by our own staff. We are also dealing with the issue of training them and putting up systems. We think that the picture will look better next year, but we think we should reflect that and say that was a problem. The last thing that I thought I had put there is the fact that we have got the qualification as SAMAF, and I want to also spend just 2 minutes before I end. The qualification of SAMAF comes from 2006. When we arrived at SAMAF, there was already 27 agreements that had been signed prior by the prior management, and we were not there. These agreements, when we said they must be tested through an audit, the Auditor General tested them because we felt there was something wrong with the agreement. They found that the agreements had an element of control in terms of definition of an international accounting standard number 27, which is based on IFRI standard. Now, because the agreements were drafted in that manner, it was a technical issue. So then those agreements are going to expire in 2010, March. Now, those agreements, therefore, either we had to cancel the agreements and issue new agreements. Now, it's not proper, it is not practical that you go to a person, you've got an agreement, and say, I'm canceling this agreement, I'm replacing with this one, because you've got to take the person through in terms of what are the new terms and conditions that you put in. That is the process that we follow. So we've been qualified because of those agreements that have got an element of control. Because that accounting standard requires that then we take all these financial intermediaries that are independent of SAMAF, we consolidate them into the financial statements of SAMAF, so that SAMAF now becomes a group of companies. It's like it owns now subsidiaries. That was not the intention. We've never intended, even in the mandate, it was never intended that the financial service cooperatives and financial intermediaries will be part of SAMAF, because that's a huge risk, because it means we have to manage all the assets as a government asset. And so that is the technical issue that was a challenge. We've dealt with that in terms of reducing that exposure, because at the time that risk was, it was 15 million. We reduced last year to 10.5 million because we've been changing the agreements as they expire. We've been negotiating. And to date, that risk is just about 3.5 million. Next year, that risk will be far less than that. So we are moving to reduce that risk of control in terms of the assets that we're supposed to consolidate. Chairperson, the last challenge before I conclude is that we conducted a review of our skills competencies required for SAMAF. We found that actually if you want to work for SAMAF, you have to have the developmental skills. You have to be able to identify opportunities that will assist SAMAF goals in the peri-urban rural areas. You've got to build the capacity of financial intermediaries in order to sustain them so that they achieve the mandate. You also have to know financial discipline and financial management, but you also have to have people skills. You have to be an activist. You've got to dirty hands. So you can't have a chief operations officer or a chief of operations or whoever sitting on the desk and pushing paper and being a bureaucrat. You've got to go there and get your hands, use your skills, make sure that those people understand what they are doing. So we have found that actually this is the required skill at SAMAF. That now, in terms of the action plans that we are putting, we have decided to embark on a training program to make sure that people have got, we call it the 3-in-1, that people have got that. So we've conducted an organizational change. There has been an extensive involvement of the staff. Staff have defined what work standards, what required leadership behaviors and attributes they require, what performance standards. We've set all those performance management systems. We have done a talent management, which we are currently moving on with it. We've taken disciplinary action against identified cases of poor performance and lack of adequate monitoring, corruption at all levels. We have, as I said, we've reviewed the loan agreement and restructured some to make sure that they are compliant with GAAP and that accounting standard 27. And the 15 loan agreements have been renegotiated, reducing that risk, which I've explained, of a non-consultation from an amount of 15 million to 3 million today. We've appointed independent service providers to conduct an extensive review of the 3-year SAMAF operations from 2006 to date. We will get that independent review as to how SAMAF has performed, but we also want to benchmark SAMAF and say if SAMAF, if the developmental microfinance in South Africa is important, how do we position the developmental finance of South Africa into the policy framework of the country so that we can deal with poverty issues using microfinance as an instrument. We also are going to write policy papers on the issues that I've mentioned about the insurance deposit. We think that it was a gap, and we're going to propose on that paper that the insurance deposit scheme must also be provided to the financial intermediaries of the working poor and the enterprising poor with assets less than 1 million. We're also proposing that the maximum loan of 10 million, of 10,000 for as a micro loan, may not be adequate now because it was in 2005 when it was agreed. We think that the inflation has actually made that the 10,000 of 2005 is no longer the 10,000 today. So we think that the gap should actually be increased to 50,000 as a micro loan because we've got a lot of number of people, entrepreneurs, that require 20,000, 30,000 to actually execute certain contracts that they get from government and the certain work that they get, and they can't get those loans anywhere, even from Kula, you know, and even from the banks. So we think that again, we want to remind the community that we're working for those people. These are some of the women that benefited from the program, and they are there, they are trading to put food on the table to survive, and we continue to finance opportunities for community-based financial intermediaries to benefit the working poor and enterprising poor communities. As you see, that is also another woman who has benefited from the program. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mr. Masters. There's one thing I didn't hear in the presentation, which I heard when we were in Pretoria. It was about the park. I didn't hear anything about the Pope, so which means you haven't had Pope these days. Honorable members, I'm sure that Honorable Nyandi has spoken to me that it's too rushed to another meeting. And you should be having some questions about Mpumalanga. I'll give him an opportunity.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation given to us and maybe take it further and say the interaction we had in Gauteng assisted us to have a broader understanding of what is happening in the summer. But at the same time, Chairperson said up front that there's no way that we can welcome and be happy if Samaf is getting a qualified opinion. Not a nice thing. I'll raise some few questions. The first one, once you check the challenges vis-a-vis what has been raised by the AG, you have these very nice challenges, but the manner in which you are presenting CEO the challenges, it's like if we are not careful, we might find ourselves in the very same situation next year. If you go to page 49 of the report, I quote what the AG says: I recognize that control procedures and governance structures were in place for a period under review, but I highlight my concern over the effective operation or execution of these processes and structures. Close quote.
Page what?
Page 40 of the annual report. Page 40 under loan collection and recovery, I think the second paragraph.
Thank you.
Second paragraph, last two. I'd like your comment on this statement in relation to what you've raised as challenges. The last point in the very same point is the first one, where it said, I quote, the loan collection process not just sufficiently robust and comprehensive to safeguard some of loan assets. If you can do a little bit of elaboration on that one in relation to what you've raised, because I'm of the view that in some other instances you might find that you are defending things that cannot be defended. Then the other part, of course, Chairperson, you are correct. There's no way that I'll fail Mpumalanga. Well, as a committee, we can't fail people of South Africa. CEO, in page, I can't see the number, from the presentation, financial intermediaries by district. I'm from Mpumalanga. We're taking the numbers, they are very interesting, but in Mpumalanga, where you are talking about district, Stiftswerke is not a district. Emalahleni is not a district. I don't know whether it's your own definition of district, but I don't think so. It's government definition of district. And Stiftswerke, Emalahleni are adjacent municipalities under Nkangala as a district. So even a walking distance. So you are focusing on the part of Witbank. In that part of Witbank, it's not Emalahleni and Stiftswerke is not a district. That should be corrected. Then the last part, where borrowers and savings per province, is very, very, very embarrassing. CEO, in Mpumalanga, we do have people with disability, but from your presentation, not even a single one was assisted. What were the reasons? It's because they are not coming forth so that you can make the necessary intervention. Because what makes it to be worse is that is the only province where not even a single one was associated. It's a bad reflection of what is happening on the ground about those people that are being prioritized. But lastly, the challenges are very clear. But maybe if we can have a detailed plan of a way forward in addressing those challenges, because what has been presented, I'm afraid, Chairperson, we might find ourselves in the very same situation next year if we are not careful. Thanks.
Any other questions on my?
Just to say that if my memory serves me well, most of the things presented here, except the port, were presented in Houghton. Now, there's no major difference, so I don't think I would want to really engage on this presentation. But also, I need to go to the province of the Northwest. This financial intermediaries by district, I can see here, CEO, that the most rural district of the province, the Karoo-Sukhumvu Mombatha region, is not appearing. Now, if you look at Mutsegedi, the Guru, it's under one municipality. I think that's why you qualified to report. That's my comment on the presentation. So other questions you've raised them during the visit. Now, to the annual report, the comment number 8 on page 39, where it says some of did not prepare consolidated group financial statements for the year ended 31 March. If you can get clarity, I don't want to read the whole of it, but I think the CEO has just reported him. And comment number 10 as well, that the policies and all of that, it looks like it's some of everybody does as she wishes or she wishes in terms of what the AG has said. I have noted other questions here, but the last one, I'll come back again because I'm so mean. Comment number 16 by the AG again. I would really ask myself, what is the role of the CEO now if that reads as it is? That some of the sort of adequate monitoring and governance processes in place to identify and address deficiencies in their systems. Now, why would you have a CEO and the management if you can't put these in place and many others? Also, just to ask a question, Chair, if last year, 2008-2009, what was the, did you get unqualified or qualified report from the AG? I think I'll come again if I see there are questions that I've noted. Thanks.
Honorable Khaled.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this people of the month, they're dealing with the most hard-hungry people. So, according to their challenges, it's like they're not training our people. I think they must train them so that they can be able to manage on how to plan their things correctly. And one other thing, I don't know whether they are having the monitoring group. If they can have those people so that they can monitor our people almost every day if possible, so that they acquaint themselves with the business. I'm a little bit worried when I'm looking at this common challenges of the Samoa. they are trying to help the people in Limpopo, but Limpopo is a huge area. I think they must extend their hand more than they have done before.
It's not enough.
Mm-hmm. It's important to later. If they were having 200 maybe, we would say they've done something. Thank you, Chief Pastor.
Any other questions? Funding and then Honorable Adams.
Honourable Chair, I have to agree with my colleague here on my right. I don't know when you give money to the poor or a person that wants to go and start as an entrepreneur, how much training is going into that. And as my colleague said, they must be monitored all day long. I wouldn't say monitored, I would say mentored. So that they have confidence in the person. My big concern is grant versus loan. And from what I can understand, the grants are coming from the state as operational costs for some of them. And the loans are the loans from that they get from the DTI as money to lend out to people. But then There's a 50% amount outstanding that's not being serviced. And one would almost ask, but where are your good results? And of all these financial intermediaries that they have, which ones are successful and what are the common best practices? And then I've just got to add to my colleagues that in the Eastern Cape, they're concentrating on the metro, which is fine, but then Alfred Nzo and Oa Tambu, which are far to the east. Not that it's not a poverty-stricken area, it is. But there are also other poor people elsewhere in the province that must be attended to. And I'll come in later again. Thank you.
Hello, Adams. Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me from the outset apologize for being late. I was just tied up with the other engagement in Parliament, Chair. Chair, I just want to find out from some of you know. Person in the constituency went to see one of the district officers here in Cape Town. I'm not sure whether it's Act of Grace or one of the officers. And then because of circumstances, this person got blacklisted, but she's got a product that she wants to put on the market and started an entrepreneur, and she has registered a CC and or a small business and that. And then she was declined because some of said that she's a credit risk. But looking through some of financial statements, if I look through what the AG has said and to what is happening here and at the financial statement and to the credit risk policy on page 57, then it speaks totally different from what this client was being told by this district office. Now, I just need to find out from the CEO, you know, as in the days now that we are in a recession and all that, I mean, even if you don't pay a traffic fine, you have been, some municipalities are taking you to credit bureau for an outstanding traffic fine. And I hope none of us have got, because the DA municipality in Cape Town are quick to issue warrant of arrest. But I mean, through circumstances beyond just people's control, you know, credit bureaus and shops just went and put people on credit bureaus. Now there is certain, through some sort of a degree, there could be an understanding. But people are just being refused point blank. And if you look at the way that the Auditor General is saying in this report that the way SAMAF is spending money and can't report and all that, then it baffles my mind why people can be turned away when there's a product that could stand a surety and those type of things. So if I can just get some clarity on that, I'll get back to the others. Thank you.
Mr. Maasa, in our dealing with this, it doesn't make one happy. You know, just dealing with a qualified audit report is not a nice thing. And I'm sure it also, you know, dents your image and your dignity, because it speaks to you as a person in charge. So I wanted to say some questions, because I know Honorable Nyambe has got to go. If you could start with Honorable Nyambe, but I would add the issue of grants and loans that seem to decrease to FI year in, year out. But what puzzles me is that the number of FI increase. So, but these grants that are decreasing in loans, but the number is increasing. And the recompilation of loans, this has borrowed. And lastly, just to check whether the independent service provider, are you running away from the term consultant? Now that it has been said, now cut down the use of consultant. Now you say independent service provider.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I must just tackle that one quickly. No, the independent service provider is a consultant. It's an audit firm that has to be appointed through a tender process, because we can't evaluate ourselves. So independent service provider, consultant is interchangeable. It's the same thing. I must start with the question of the controls, internal controls. I think it's correct that that has been raised by the Auditor General. I highlight my concern over effective operation execution of the controls, especially regarding loan collection and recovery. Here is what we've done to that. At the time the audit was conducted, we were executing debt collection measures. We were taking people that were not paying through the courts. What happened is that we were confronted with a technical problem again, because we are not a legal entity. So when we took the people to collect, when we collected in the court of law, the court people took us to court and they challenged our technical our legal status, and they said, "You are a trading entity, you can't sue me. You've got to sue me through the minister." So it is true that from the audit point of view, the process of collection took longer. The sharpness of our collection, loan collection and recovery, was blunted by that process. But we were able to ask for the accounting office. We had to apply to the accounting officer and ask for the financial delegations, and to give us those financial delegations so that we can sue. Now, that is what the Auditor General is raising here, that your execution of collection of the loans that are outstanding is not sharp enough. And that's how we've dealt with that issue. So I hope I've cleared the issue of loan collection, that it was not robust at the time as it much, but we have since got powers, delegation from the accounting officer to sue through the court of law, and we are now collecting what is due to us. So we've corrected that. I think the issue of the district, I think I don't want to answer it. I think we're going to correct that, because we got these district, the Kangala, Steve Trete, we got them from the people that were that are working in Mpumalanga, and we thought that they know the district, because we said, "Which district are you? used the government and they said that this is Kangala. So I think we got to correct that. So I just want to accept that. The other thing that I want to accept that we are going to bring here is a detailed plan of the controls. I think the issues that have been asked by the committee, that I must give you a detailed plan of how I have responded to the issues of internal controls and the development of internal controls. I think I couldn't, I thought that I would not be more detailed here, so I was struggling with my time, whether I should be more detailed or, but I will bring that, I must promise to them, and I'll bring them by next week. I'll give you a detail of exactly what are the internal controls and the controls that we've effected. The issue of Northwest, sorry, I'm just taking the issues that are quite easier. The issue of not assisting the disabled people in Mpumalanga.
If I could ask you to deal with the questions of Honorable Nyambi.
Yes. I don't know. I think I've dealt with the issue of collection. The one of disabled is also the question. The issue of disability is also a concern to us, to you, Chairperson. The problem we have is that as a wholesale fund, we can have so much influence to the financial intermediaries. So this is an accurate statistic of what has happened, and we also regret that there are no disabled people here. And the intermediaries that are operating there did not give us any evidence or any report that they have funded disabled people. And we are struggling with a situation of we can't force them to say, look for disabled people. But we are going to work on that because we also can't tell them who they must lend to. But they have given us these statistics and we've noted that there is a problem in terms of disability. So perhaps it's something that we will actually work with the financial intermediary and say, don't you have clients that are disabled? Why are you not reaching out? What is the problem that causes you not to lend to them? So we're going to come with a report on that one. I don't know whether I've dealt with your questions. Okay. All right. Let me just pick the other one. The Northwest Commission. I don't know whether it was, why are we not consolidating that? Why are we not having presence in the Northwest, and especially in the district? Yeah. Again, this issue of Northwest and other provinces is a challenge to us. We go out outreach, we go for outreach, and we get applications from communities that are prepared to come forward. So far, in terms of national statistics, we've received 54 applications, we approved 42. And out of the applications that we've received, it is that demand that we deal with. It's not, we haven't received anything from the district that you mentioned. I know that there are certain other applications that arrived after the 31st of March, Triban and others. I do not know which district they are in, but we are going to look at that because we also can't force people and say go to that district, but we can just do an outreach and market to a region and say please come up because we've got this support that we can give you. And we are planning actually on the 27th of November to have a provincial summer talking to the people in the Northwest. I'm not sure which district, I'll come with the facts. But we are. That is part of our outreach to say to people, some are there to help you. So the fact that we are not in all of those regions is a question of demand. People have not submitted applications, and we are going to look at that whether our outreach, our marketing, can actually generate a demand in that area. Why some of has not consolidated? I think in the audit report it is said we have not consolidated as per that accounting standard due to non-availability of information from financial intermediaries. I put that challenge. But for us to consolidate, firstly, we didn't want to consolidate, so we refused to consolidate because these institutions do not belong to us. And the Auditor General has been of the view that, well, because of the way you've arranged, you've structured the agreement, these institutions belong to you, you must consolidate. And we've spoken to the attention with the Auditor General to say, but that was not the intention. The second thing is that the kind of information that they need high-level information, they need financial statements that are audited, they are according to GAAP, and that is expensive for a financial intermediary that is small as this one to provide. So we said we'd rather be qualified or not submitting this information than asking the institutions to meet a high level, very, very high level requirement that they cannot even pay for to get auditors and get financial. So we are qualified because we did not consolidate, because that was never the intention of the mandate to consolidate. We, as I said, in 2010 by March, this qualification should have gone, because the contract were 3 years that we inherited, and they have run through their time. So we are not going to consolidate, nor are we going to have a qualification around this issue. That is why we did not consolidate. And we really don't want to consolidate them. We don't want them to say the assets that they have are assets of SAMAF, because they are their assets. They are their own savings. They are their own. The non-adequate governance report, the non-adequacy of the governance structures and compliance, I think we've taken note of that. I've already said that the Auditor General gave us that finding, which was not a good finding for us. And I've already said that we've dealt with that institution, and it's going to be part with that problem. It's going to be part of the detailed response that I'm going to give. How did we deal with the issue of non-compliant with governance issues? I'm gonna make a detailed presentation of that, a detailed submission to the committee on that. The training of entrepreneurs and monitoring is not adequate. I think that's also part of the report that I'm going to say. But the issue of training end user applicants, end user borrowers, is a difficult problem again for us. We work with financial intermediaries, and we give them grants, we train them, and part of their program is to lend and also train the end users themselves in terms of business. So what we have not shown here is that the financial intermediaries that are lending to the end users, are they training the institutions? We've got a report in some of the financial intermediaries, like the WDB. WDB trains trains end users. They give them money and they train them on other things. We are going to bring that report. It's not a perfect situation where everybody really trains. Some institutions are not training. We accept that. But as some of we can also go so far, we train them so that they also train. So it's a long road downward. So we accept that in some areas it's just the granting of funding and no training, and so there's a collapse of institutions, there's high failure rate. In some areas, the reason why in Mpumalanga we've got success is because there's lending and also there's part of training. There is a question about grants going down and financial intermediaries going up. I think I must explain the way we operate as SAMAF. Maybe it's linked to the timing differences of the cash flows and how we approve. We approve funding, which we don't disperse, because it's approved by the credit committee. It says, here is the funding for this institution that now we are approving. And the institution is therefore approved, and it comes into our system. Then we disperse. We don't disperse the whole funds of the institution. We disperse according to certain tranches as a progress. So if you find that the grants have been going down, also it's because of the fact that when we disperse grants or we disperse loans, we already have the institutions, but they were approved, but the disbursement itself has not been done. But the other thing that is linked to that is that when we started, if you look at when we started with high grants in the first year. We dispersed almost 10 million, 10.7 million on grants, and the loans were also around 10 million. The second year, it was 6 million, the loans were high. This is the requirements of the model of SAMAF. SAMAF was asked to build a loan book for these institutions because these institutions then will lend money and then will earn interest themselves. So we had said in the first year we had given you 10.7 million on grants to capacitate you. So we think that your absorption capacity for loans has increased. So once we increased the loans and we gave grants that are quite lower than the 10 million. In the third year, we reduced the grants, we increased the loans again because we said we've already given you grants for your systems, for training your people, and they are still there. So you should be able to absorb higher loans because loans are also an asset for the communities. So that's what we've been. But we have learned that actually we need to review that model because grants and loans can actually come together. It shouldn't be a huge reduction on grants and a high increase on loans. So they must be quite close to each other. So in terms of the allocation of our budget, we are looking at that. And that is also going to be part of the report that I must submit, a detailed report. That says, how are we funding the grants versus loans? And why are the institutions growing? And how are we making sure that the grants and loans are used effectively? So that will also be part of the detailed report. There was also a last question which I picked up about the best practices. I thought there were grants, and then there was a question about best practices. What are the best practices on mentoring? Why? What are the best practices on loan servicing? I think, again, the question of SAMAF is just near 3 years. I do want to emphasize this, Chairperson, to you. SAMAF is just a mere 3 years of existence, and we were asked to pilot and test this model of developmental microfinance in South Africa. Now, we are 3 years, if you benchmark us with the countries that have done this business or this work for the past 20 to 30 years, you can take Bangladesh, you can take Grameen. Grameen has been there for almost 40 years. They only started to show huge results after 20 years of having done this business. They started in 1976, they made mistakes, they learned from their mistakes. In 1995, Grameen was able to reach the 7 million borrowers, and they were able to break even after 20 years, starting from 1970s. If we benchmark ourselves with the best institutions, we can find that we should be given time, and I'm not saying that the time should be equal to 40 years or 20 years. All I'm saying is that 3 years of learning and making mistakes and 3 years of learning and making mistakes, that is the part of the business. So if we benchmark as to why are we not developing the people and training, and why are we not learning better than we are learning also from the other institutions and saying, okay, this is what we've done and we shouldn't do it this way. So the mentoring program, again for the end users, is a difficult call for us. These institutions that we are funding are the ones that we should support, that they should have a mentoring program within their own lending program, and that's one of the proposals that we are going to make. There was the one of the credits. I think this one of the credit bureau. Is a question that I think I don't want to answer it here. I really want to get more details as to why a client would go to SAMAF and then is asked that you are in the credit bureau, you can't be helped. We don't help individual clients. If the client was act of grace, and act of grace as a financial intermediary was told that you are paying the credit bureau, then we can't help you, then we can deal with that. But I know that act of grace was assisted by SAMAF, and there were problems later.
there were problems later in terms of the misuse, I mean the use of funds, but I don't have details. But if a client goes to SAMAF, we've never used all the 42 institutions that we funded. None of them have ever said, because you're in the credit bureau as an institution, we're not going to fund you. But if there is that specific case, I can deal with it.
One comment would be the training of end users would benefit SAMAF, because at the end of the day, it is SAMAF, you know, who have to get the reports and so on. So SAMAF shouldn't be comfortable that, you know, I deal with the FIs and then they are to train. I think it should be a condition that you get this money, provided you're going to train, so that when you check, then it has been trained. Training has taken place. The issue on the loss of disposable assets seemed to be high on 2007-2008 and went down. We always query, you know, such changes. We're always surprised when there are such changes. Also, the loss on loans, they're quite high in 2007-2008. Was there any tsunami, you know, that would say, hey, things aren't well, but such as that. You know, you look at the grants. You had 10 million on grants and you had 31 FIs. Then you have 5 million, it's a combination. That 31 should be a combination of loans and grants.
The
number of FIs.
Yes.
It's a combination.
Yes.
It would have been nice if they were you know, separated. Because we would know that on grant, on that 10 million, there are so many FIs, and on loans, there are so many FIs. But I just look at the number, the increase from on loans, 31 FIs to 38, just 7, you know. The increase was substantial, from 9 million to 18 million. Quite big, almost double. But the difference is only 7. It's not only loans, it might be grants. So it will be interesting to know who really, you know, what really happened really to the 9 million. It could have been 3 FIs or what. Any follow-up questions from another member? Harold Dekhale.
Thank you, Professor. I was looking at this picture. Okay. I was looking at this picture and asking myself this question. Do the SAMAF people have the research people or research wing before they give the people money, before they lend the money or give them the money? Because if you give a person money and then he goes and buys the equal, and then at the end of the day, if the efforts are not involved, then they won't be either, because they won't have anything to for themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Thank you.
For me?
Mr. Chair, page 65. Advertising costs of 1.6 million. Now, you know, we're not in a commercial banking business here. I'm a little bit shocked about that one. If we could get clarity on that. 65.
Chair, also on page 65, in that same bracket, consulting expenses, 2.7 million, went up by 700,000 rand. Did some of you so much consultant, and as it is the view of the present government that less consultants would be used? It has been said at the cabinet report, it has been said at the State of the Nation address, it has been said all over that government will make use of not so much consultants, but I mean it's a massive amount of cost going for consultants. And this operating lease expenses, if you can just get a little bit of detail of what's happening there. Subsistence and travel, it nearly went up by, it's 100 to 1 million. You know, 1 million went up by 1 million and some change there. That's quite a lot. Where departments and where SOEs and all that have to cut down, have to cut the fat, yet gone up by 1 million. And then, and other expenses, if you can just get a little bit of details on the other expenses, 3.5 million also went up by 800,000. I think the CEO is quite capable of handling the big article. But let's, Chair, and then on page 41, it gives the reason for the qualified opinion of the AG. And it's on information and communication. And it says clearly, pertinent information is not identified and captured in a form and time frame to support financial reporting. And I think the CEO needs to tackle the CFO and all those other people that does not do the job properly, because it is a very bad sign and a signal. Because it is not to say that they've got an audit report on wasteful expenditure or and all that, but it is just reporting. But still, it's a bad mark against the name for a small thing like that for reporting. And capturing, you know, it is. So I think somewhere along the line there, CEO, you need to put your foot down. I don't know what size you wear, but if it's a small shoe, get a bigger shoe. Just put it down. Put some newspapers in the shoe, like the old people used to do when your shoes are new and you have to wear big shoes. Put some newspapers or stones in there and put it down, because because I mean you've got a good audit, but just that one qualified, just that one mark on the IC, and that puts everything in a negative light. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Mayor.
Thanks, Chair. I think Honourable Adams stole my question, most of my questions. Now, Chair, in relation to what I raised on the governance, monitoring governance protocols, I've heard the CEO, but I am not convinced that by implication is saying that they are 3 years learning mistakes. So I can't accept that in 3 years this should be the case. It cannot be acceptable, CEO. Because it is at the taxpayer's expense. Now it can be. As I said, that Honorable Adams stole my question. Let me just go to the agency report again. On the comment number 3, comment number 23, page 44, that SAMAS has not reported throughout on its performance with regard to its objectives as per approved strategic plan. What is interesting to me is that no evidence could be provided, the last part, no evidence could be provided that this sentence has been approved. I would be very interested. The last one, Chair, is comment number 24. If we could also get clarity, we understand the 3 years and all of that, but it's not very convincing. on the presentation here, you know, I just want to check on this intermediary. As I said that you had a 3-year contract with them, and in the 3 years you've experienced a lot of things. I think we need a change of heart and attitude in terms of operations, and I think we can't, if we're still up with our business at Summers, I don't think we'll continue to use most of these people, because as you say, they create problems for Summers. But as the chair said, end users must also be trained, and it must be a responsibility of some of the institutions. Otherwise, you are the one who's going to get the audit report, and we are going to harm on you. And I think we cannot allow the fourth day. We'll advise the minister that it's not working, or the staff, including the CEO, must go and get new people if we really need some of in South Africa, because we can't continue to waste taxpayers' money and all of that. So I'm sure that you also harm on provinces that they must meet their service delivery targets, because there's some of the things that the AG is raising in a lot of things. So if you have been meeting sales, they will suggest that, because responses would not really differ from the initial one. It's going to be 3 years, and the detailed report will come and all of that. I would suggest that we close and the implement the rate for that. Thank
you. Honorable Mindset, but it's good that we have some of here, because you can go back to the Northwestern report and say he's bringing some of there, he's taking some of the Northwest. You see, they're disturbing the CEO now, Chair. Chair, I just need some clarification from the CEO. On page 70, on contingent liability, Samaf has made a surplus of 15 million. So it shows that there was not, I won't say there was not at all, there could be some wasteful expenditure and fruitless expenditure, but we made a surplus of 15 million. Very good. So, but still, it has been classified as a contingent liability because of the page 70 of the annual report, the last page. 25.25. You know, and so I think, has Treasury acceded to Samaf's request that the money should be retained for the 2008 2009-2010 financial year budget? And then, okay, Honorable Van Lingen will go to the other question. Thank you.
I've now lost my page, because I thought you were somewhere going to ask the question. You know, Mr. Chair, I think what is very important is we've now seen this is a bit dim apart. And our problem is, well, let me first do that question. The bottom of page 69, funds committed for loans not yet drawn, almost 32 million. So is SANAF doing what it's supposed to do? Then my second question. We now know that there was an audit report. We know that there are challenges. But surely there are monthly statements. And mustn't they come back to us with a 6-month progress report from the 1st of April until now to show that what they have now turn this thing around, because that's we're going to sit here and worry for a long time. But if we see the financial report after 6 months and there's no light, then we can most advise the minister to close down this business. Thank you.
Mr. Master CEO, I'm sure, before you comment, I'm sure the proposals are correct. Maybe you'll have to come back just in November within the statement, financial statement, so that we could see any progress. But to be honest with you, the state of affairs at Samaf is really bad. And we cannot lie. We need to be honest. and one wants to see this turnaround strategy. I don't like the turnaround strategy, but I use the term. But someone says, you turn around, you don't do good, you turn around again, well, you're not doing good. So when something really new, something different, that will change. So I would accept that proposal from members that you'll have to come back. So we'll find some time in November. You come back and you report on these things. You know, because some of the things, they make us shiver when they're to have the people that are on the lowest end of the community, those that just need 500,000, 1,000, 5,000, and this institution is in this place. It just makes us uncomfortable. But just be brief in your comments, taking into account that would want to spend a day with you, and you'll have to be detailed. And I'm sure Honorable Mind will convince you to go to his constituency for the launch of that as part of the turnaround.
So we want to know when he's going away. Isn't
it in Limpopo? Even in Limpopo, yeah. We've got an invitation from Hoshi here in Limpopo. So it's up to you now.
Okay, I'm just going to start with the balance sheet page 55, the questions that were asked. Just because they are quite clear. The consulting expenses of 2.7 million, what is that? Jefferson, we were when we came in SAMAF, we had an accounting system that is BAS accounting system. And so it does not report according to GAAP. So we had to ask for implementation of a system, an accounting system. We had to ask auditors to test that system, that it can produce proper financial statements. So that's part of the big consultation fee. Actually comes from that, which was set up, which was a tender that had to go out to set up our financial system that can report outside of the. We can actually detail it. We can split it, and so when we come back in November, we can detail that and say, okay, this 2.7 million was this and this and this. We can do that. I hope then that will be clarified more. Then the issue of operating lease expenses. Chairman, we've got leases that we have in each province because we've got offices, so we lease through the public works. And they rent these offices to us. Those are the lease agreements that we have, and we pay public works. And so that money, we can also split it and say, this is a lease for Northern Cape and all that, and the money went to public works. We can show that. The subsistence and travel. The subsistence and travel, we've got these provinces. We've got four people in each province. That's how we started. And these people have to travel. We've got outreach officers amongst these four people. Two outreach officers that have got to go deep into the rural areas to market, to outreach, to monitor, to do all the things that some of us have to do operational. And so we have to pay for their cars as they travel. So that subsistence allowance, we can even split it and show that actually is more operational, it's direct operational expense that. And the last thing about advertising, I have said we've been running a program that we call SAMAF Talking to the People. We've run it to almost seven provinces. Each, we've been to Limpopo actually, we're at Mutale District. We launched there. We chose that district because I think it was said to be the one of the poor districts. So we lost there, and in other regions, where even in the Atlantic, we spend money when we do that because we also invest in that local community for transport, people to be transported, you know, and all of those things, to hire halls and all that. That advertising is not advertising to show the face of the CEO how clever he is or whatever. It is the advertising outreach. Going to the people and talking to them, we can show you the evidence. We've got evidence. We can split that advertising expense also.
Thank you.
that it is actually going to the people. That's what we call advertising. So I think I've gone through that one. I think I must come to page 44, the inconsistency in the reported performance information. I think it's very, the finding is only related to the budget. I mean, the finding must, I just want to remind that the finding is not a finding that is global, that is, say, someone doesn't have, it doesn't have got inconsistent. It relates to this specific issue. It relates to a target of 68 million that we agree we should have put, but we put at a lower target. And it says that there's no evidence. SAMAF did not report throughout its performance with regard to its objective as the strategic plan due to changes to targets from the approved strategy. No evidence could be obtained that these changes have been approved. What happened is that we put a target of 47 million, and that was a mistake. We accepted that it's an error. It was supposed to be 68 million. It was our own target that we put. So the auditors, when they audit, they found that this target of 47 million, but they said, what is the target? We said it's 68 million, but they say you haven't returned this 68 million. And they said, yes, we made a mistake. And they said, oh, you did not even get an approval to actually change it to 47 million. That is the issue that we're talking about here. So it's not like the whole sum of information is not accurate. And then the issue of sources of information not accurate, this is the second one. Source of information not accurate. Again, it refers to that particular issue of, we said we had a target of 23, and we said we only reported 4 that we have achieved. But the auditor said, actually, you have 5. So you've under-reported. So that was, again, an error of one entity that we did not report. So I'm just explaining exactly the specific issues that are raised by the auditor. Then I must come back to loss of assets, the 21,000 and the 81,000. What did we do? Last year we had lost a computer, which actually the computer, when we took over and counted the computers, we found that this computer was not there, and we were not there. It was a laptop. And because it was already in the second year, in 2007, 2008, because we took over in 2006, 2008. I came in October, only 6 months before the audit. So I had to do inventory counts, asset counts, and everything. By the time I finished in March 2007, the computer was not there. But it was not reported in the previous audit by the auditors themselves. So we said, but this computer was not there, so report it in this year. And they reported it as a computer that got lost. Now, the question we're being asked is, why now did it reduce this loss, the asset loss? They reduced it because we put systems in terms of our asset management. We really put systems, and there's no asset that has been lost except for the fact that this 8,100 is a payment of interest of an invoice from Public Works. So it is seen as a loss of, as an irregular expenditure, because we paid an interest that was charged to us. So it's not necessarily a loss of assets. So our systems for asset management improved. That's why we reported less. And then the loss of loans of 12 million, what happened, the tsunami in 2007, 2008. Again, these are time factors. When I came in October 2006, to run the company 6 months before the year end, I say I had 27 institutions that had already been approved without proper processes. Those institutions' funds had been disbursed to them. Now, they took time. In 2007, 2008, they started to collapse. They started to create problems in terms of non-payment and being delinquent. They started those conflicts between the board and members started, and we lost money. So we had to start to impair, but we did not just write them off and impair them. We actually followed, as we are doing now, in terms of foreclosures, debt collections, and all that. We are still collecting in this institution. Some of them still do exist. They are going to pay us. But for accounting purposes, we had to impair that huge amount of money from the 27 institutions that really had messed us up. So it was a timing issue, because we should have written them off in 2006. I could have come in and said, I'm not accepting these 27 institutions because they shouldn't be here. But they were written off in the second year. The reason why we went down this year in terms of the loan losses is because we've been tight. The Auditor General says we are not executing internal controls, but they say the systems have been developed. They say that. So we have developed systems. We are not yet robust, we accept, but we are improving on the system. That's why those loan losses is no longer 12 million. It's about 2 million this year. And we want to reduce that further. We are going to give details of that, as how we are improving in terms of loan losses and collection. I'm not sure this increase of 18 million to FIs. Oh, okay. There was only an increase of FIs in 2008 by 7, from 31 to 38. But there was a huge disbursement of 18 million of loans. Why is that? Again, we approved money this year. They brought down the institution. So part of the 18 million, and we can show it, part of the 18 million that we dispersed was dispersed to the institution that has already been approved the previous year anyway. Because there's always timing differences here. You disperse this year to institutions that you had approved last year also, together with institutions that you have approved this year. So it's not a question that you approve 7 institutions now and then you disperse to them.
Meaning the previous financial year?
Previous financial year.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, but then it must not show in the book that they've committed themselves for that funding, and it should show that they have it's there, and it has been committed to those projects.
I think that is why we have got that 32 million that you asked. Money that has been consummated to institutions but not brought down. That is where those commitments are. It's there. It's that question that I was going to answer also. It was asked here. The 32 million that we had the previous year committed to institutions but not dispersed. That's how it happened. So we draw down in the following year sometimes.
So it means the turnaround time is a year?
It's not necessarily a year because no, it's not necessarily a year. I mean, we approve institutions this year, okay? And they draw down. They can draw down the funds during the same year, but not necessarily, because it's them, it's their appetite. They say, okay, out of the 1 million that you've given me, I want to draw down 200,000. Then they draw it down and they use it for 6 months. They draw 200,000, they use it for 6 months. 600,000 is left for the next year and is carried over, and they draw it down that year. That's how it happens. And it's the nature of their business. The research and monitoring for adequate support is part of our it's part of our monitoring. When we go to institutions, we sit down with them, we show them how to report, we train them on how to report. That's part of the monitoring. But what we concede is that we've not been going to end users and training them. That monitoring is not for end users. It is for intermediaries. Now, the Auditor General has said, okay, that's not adequate. We must have evidence. The Auditor General is just looking for evidence. And this is going to be part of the detailed information when I respond to this committee in November, that here's the evidence that we can show that this is what we've done. It can be audited. The Auditor General can go to this file and say, this is what we've done. So I'm going to show that again. I think I've answered the question of the commitment of 32 million that was unused, because we approve funding and then it's committed but it's not used and then it carries over. I think the 6 month financial statements and the detailed report is something that we take it as a recommendation and as a proposal and as an instruction. We are going to do that. We are going to submit 6 month financial statement. We are going to submit a detailed response on some of the things that I have committed to submit detailed response.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chen. Welcome. We got your apology. Funding and made it a point. I think there's still an outstanding question. Just to find out, has Treasury given the approval? or is that 15 million going somewhere to help or defense or somewhere?
Sorry, Chairperson, now I forgot that question. The National Treasury has given us an approval. We've got a letter. We've reinvested that money, that interest. We've reinvested it to the business. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, interesting. The CEO mentioned that Bangladesh and another country, and I can't remember which is the other country, are now making successful loans, and that we've only been in the situation for 3 years, so that's why we're not successful. Are we working on the same practices? Why are those two countries successful, and why are we using their methodology? That's the question.
Well, just a question that has slipped my mind, which I wanted to ask earlier. I asked to your forgiveness for this. But, Chair, I don't know if it's practice at SAMAF only that the CEO is not getting a pension contribution, but the CFO is getting. And the COO, just on that, on page 66, as he left, that's why it said there, including settlement, he or she. Because it's quite a strange phenomenon that the COO can earn more than the CEO. The CEO must be a very patient man to earn less than his COO. And also, I don't see if from 2008 there is no pension contribution towards the CEO. Is that a trend of some up or? Or do they think that the CEO won't get old? Chair, and then I just want to reiterate the point to say that SAMAF, I think, has been doing the affairs quite well, to state that. It's just here or there where there's some certain things, small mistakes that have made this report a bit negative. But I think overall it has been good. If you can have a surplus, if you can have if you brought down your wasteful expenditure by such a huge amount and all those other things, Chair. I think I must say, I've got this thing that we must give credit where credit is due, Chair. So I think that really they're trying their utmost best, but I think they can improve and do better. Thanks, Chair.
See you.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, the COO is one of the measures that we took, because if you look at the audit report, it talks about the execution of operational controls. And so it was a question of saying, look, we are not doing well in operation in terms of execution of controls, so then we should part ways. So we also had to pay. The second issue about the CEO not getting pension is a deliberate thing, Chairperson. I'm on a contract with SAMAF, a 3-year contract, so I'm not a part of the pension, so I'm paying my own pension so that if I'm fired tomorrow, I can have my pension. It's just a deliberate thing. The issue of Bangladesh experiences and others is a very serious issue. I'm happy that this thing is raised, and I'm not going to make a long voice. What I've done is to use a benchmarking exercise. I've asked the question to say, if Bangladesh and Indonesia and others started this way, what are the institutions that were wholesale funds that were established, and when they were established, and when did they make successes, and why do they make successes? So we're learning quite a lot from them. As I say, we are only 3 years and they are 40 years. So we're benchmarking ourselves against them, but we're saying we want to fast track. We can't be 40 years. We can't wait for 40 years to get the results. We won't. But we're saying let's take the best practices from Bangladesh, Grameen model, let's take them. From PKSF, let's take them. From South America, let's take them. We're taking them. I have written a paper that I can share with this committee which is a benchmarking exercise of where SAMAF is and why did these other institutions succeed. There's been a lot in terms of the way they are regulated, the way they are structured, the policy framework of the country and everything. And so I think that it will be beneficial for us and the committee to learn on those policy framework, the legislative framework, the institutional arrangement, and a lot of other things, and the performance of those institutions. So I can submit that paper again because I've written the paper for benchmarking.
No, thanks. We'll be ready to get the paper. Any further questions? It looks like we've had our day. We enjoy having summer. We thought we'd have some pork. Unfortunately, not this time. Thanks very much, Mr. Master. It was a good engagement. It was the information that we wanted. And we'll call you with these details. And I'm sure you will invite us to the Northwest when we launch and the Bombo. Other honourable members. That brings us then to the end of this meeting, which is the first session, but we have some minutes which we wanted to go through.
And, Chair, with your indulgence, I beg your indulgence in this regard, but if we can just, see that the two secretaries are here to discuss our oversight for next week, please.
Thank you. Oh, that's fine. Thank you. Mr. Master, I'm sure you have your business cards here, which are not more than 10.
Nobody has one for me.
It's
contact details aren't here, sir, so we'll get them.
No, the problem with the contact details is no cell number.
Let me put my cell number. It is 079.
This is Alec guy, he's still in the working paper.
Alec.
I'm just informing that I'm going to contact you about that matter.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Do expect my call. Do expect to launch something in case of that.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'll call you to launch something in case of that on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Honourable members, co-chair, it's just, I think the major issue we can discuss is about oversight. Just to get the briefing and all that and see what it is.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, we've received a letter, first of all, let me start off by saying, from Richards Bay Minerals, the mine, Richards Bay Minerals, RBM. Yeah. They have invited the committee, see that we are there, to come and have a look at their success stories and also their partnership that they have created with the communities, and also, you know, to in terms of our oversight with mining, to look at the social and labor responsibility plans and to see whether they are doing the right things or not. We have approached the thank you for your assistance in that also, Chair. We have approached the House Chairperson, responsible for committees, to speak to the chief whip to find out whether we can utilize the 5th and the 6th and not come back on the 4th. As initially planned, use the 5th and the 6th to do a proper oversight over Richards Bay Minerals. As the chairperson has said, we have the two areas, the two mines are very far from one another. We have decided to go to Exarum mine. So we are still waiting for the approval from the house chair. She's engaging the chief of this morning to find whether we can be excused from that sitting of the 5th, because it's only got to do with the provincial report, whether we can be excused from that. Because if with us not there, the house will still form a quorum. So, Chair, I'm going to hand over to the two secretaries to take us through. And what's the provision of maybe the 5th inclusive and without the 5th and the 6th inclusive?
Yeah, before, I'm sure Brett can turn this side. Before that, I got a message that the chief wanted or had said is going to phone us, which means myself and Honourable Brett. But he hasn't phoned me, So I assume maybe they allowed the 5th. But the House Chairperson said we got the support from the Chairperson of the Council. That whilst we're still there, they actually wanted to cut down on all those bills on that day and just have the provision to. But it will be more expensive if we go back to that area from here. So just one day sleeping in there, it will be far better. So I'm sure with the co-chair will see the chief and find out that's finally. But according to the House Chairperson, they have authorized that up to the chair.
Yeah, we think if the House Chair and the Chair of the Council has authorized it, because the overriding factor is the House Chairperson of the committee. And not the chief whip is only for consent. But it's not as to say, as far as I understand the rules, it's not to say as far as the, it should be, and it should be the chief of decision should be the law of that's been cast in stone. If the House Chair says it's fine, because she at the end of the day, on her recommendation, committee sections have released the budget and that, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
On the House Chair's recommendation. But we'll engage Chief for that and find out, because if that is then so, then we should just shift our itinerary in terms of doing the engine refinery the Wednesday. We can do it the Friday. It's in Durban, on our way to Durban. We can take out the day, finish by 1, and people can go. I think there is flights from Durban to Sydney. There is flights from Durban to Sydney. There is flights from Durban to Johannesburg. Unfortunately, there is no flights from Durban to Moira. Even Kimberley. But even there flights from Durban to Sydney.
No.
Oh, okay. But be that as it may, I mean, if Honourable Mine has a connecting flight from Joburg to Kimberley earlier, we can still release it because the department will be there. We have given, we have got the assurance from the department that they will give us all the necessary in mining as well as energy, all the necessary support. Honourable Mine?
No, sir, I was just saying that we should finalize the fees before the end of the day. Maybe we should have met with the House Chair and the week for planning purposes. If we leave it for tomorrow, it is already late.
No, no, we leave it.
So by today, it should be dealt with. Thanks.
I'm sure after this, we'll try and see the House Chair. The problem is time, it's against us. To find them and then go to the chief, so that should be there. Grace,
good day, honorable members. Where can I start? I'm just happy to say that, honorable members, I really acknowledge that, I mean, time is not low, it's not on our side, more especially with the extension. Then we will really appreciate if, after this meeting, the issue with regard to the chief whip can be expedited, so we can, you know, deal with our administrative, you know, matters, which is a very serious challenge. As such, well, if I can report on the trip, I mean up until the 4th right now, we have secured, I mean, we've got the voucher for the venue, I mean the venue is secured, but we still have a challenge, you know, with the flight. The travel agent, then it's been come back to us in terms of the flight. Then I think, but then it's good is then if we'll be changing, you know, to Friday, then yeah, but for now it is that what I can report. And also, yeah, I think so far we're facing a small glitch with regard to the flight. Well, the person who was staying was just that he's not here today. He's busy with all these issues right now. That's why he was supposed to come and assist here in this meeting, but I've requested him to remain behind so that this, maybe after the meeting everything will be sorted out. I remember maybe this afternoon at least you can get all your details. I mean, probably with regard, you know, the trip as up until the 4th. But if, then if there's going to be a go-ahead, then it means a lot of work, I mean, to us, which it is. We are ready, we're equal to the task.
Morning, honorable members. I think my colleague has already covered everything, except that what I'm going to say, I've been trying to get hold of the of Thabang in the office of the House Chair to find out if the chairperson has come up with the, whether approval to approve the 2 days, but there is no one. It looks like there is no one in the office. Maybe they are busy in a meeting somewhere. So I will. I think after this meeting, I will go to his office. But at the moment, the preparations are still on hold because we are waiting for this extension.
Yesterday, I asked Shupera, hey, learn to cut out the middle man. You know, Grace and Shupera could have done this booking others. This thing of agents, same as brokers. Hey, and I'm telling you, I'm forwarding it. My experience is with them. You always have a challenge, you always have a problem. Even on Sunday, you're going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if Grace and Shupera were arranging these things, done,
Mr. Chair, I entirely agree with you. I entirely agree with you because all the tips that we had, we've got to go back to them and then say, but no, it can't happen like this, or it can't happen like that, or you land there the day before the time, or something like that. So maybe you can ask for a streamline. And doing away with the fraud, because by doing away with the fraud, we're doing away with commissions that we can sum a book here through Parliament. I would appreciate the fact that we could have closure on the time frame of this trip from the 1st till the 6th, because within the party, we also have to notify them of where we're going to be when. And we've got to do it today.
Chair, thank you. I think we will notify everybody by 3. I'm supposed to go to Honorable Nyambi's meeting, but I'll go to the Chief of the House Chair first, and then I will then have a meeting with the two secretaries and the co-chair, and then we will let everybody know by 3. Say 3, yeah. The cut-off time is 3. I think the as the DJs also said to me yesterday that we should in actual fact, because there is some very successful stories of how DMR, Department of Mineral Resources, which is mining now, has stepped in, and as the lady has in a presentation said, that they have stepped in and called mining houses to order, you know, to say that you haven't delivered on your social and labor plan or your social responsibilities. So also, and with Richard very mineral, so upbeat about it, to say, I mean, they are very brave to invite the parliamentary committee to say, hey, come and look at these things. We can use them as a benchmark for other big mining houses to say, but listen, there's a benchmark or anything set by a company. And please, I mean, you guys should follow that benchmark. We can even say to GMR, but there's the benchmark, there's an example being set. You know, if Richard Bay Minerals can do it, I'm just worried about Kuha. I'm worried about Limpopo. I'm worried about Northwest. I'm worried about Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, for argument's sake. So I think it is really critical for us to go there to this research basing and view this thing, do a report, so that we can call DMR and say that that is what we are doing. So I don't know which. So I think that is one of the aspects that we should do. My motivation would be. I don't know what agents are we using as travel agents. If we're using Harvey Wells, then we have a problem already. honestly, those people are problematic. I don't know how they can still be in existence. It's only Parliament that is keeping them in existence. Because for them it's always an issue when there needs to be flights or when there needs to do, they want to do it their way instead of giving or accede to the wishes of the customer. So Chair, if needs be, we will definitely get down on them very seriously. They might just, if the two secretaries can just find out from the members what time the connecting flights in Joburg are for them to go home, because I'm not sure. I know there's a flight from Durban to Mpumalanga, but I'm not sure whether there's a flight from Durban to Limpopo.
No.
Not now. So we just need to find out what time. I know the last flight to Limpopo is what time? 7:45 in the evening. No, if we are leaving, on Sunday.
Sunday.
Mm. And then we will be, if possible, we will be returning maybe the Friday. Mm. But if we get the extension, we'll be leaving Durban Friday, next week Friday.
No, we're coming back. We can come back. After Chair is saying, we're leaving Sunday. Mm. If we get our troop and we'll come back on Friday.
But if you're not coming to Cape Town Friday, you can go to your home from Durban.
How many days will we go to Sunday?
If we get the approval, we spend 5 days.
But not in Durban.
In Peter Maritzburg. Not for Richard's Bay.
It's almost Friday to go.
Yeah,
we're
going home.
You'll be going home on Friday.
The
whole point is, Honorable Bihari, what we're going to do, if possible, we're going to slot in and start early in the morning at the refinery, so that we finish by 12. Those that needs to leave early, they can leave early from the refinery to the airport to catch their flight, catch their connecting flight. Those of us that got the leisure of time, like Honorable Gamera, myself, Honorable Chen, and Honorable Van Lingen, we can still stay around in Durban and leave maybe at 3 or something. But those that needs to leave at 12 for a flight for 1 to catch the connecting flight, I know you got a connecting flight at 4. Quarter to four. So you'll still make it because it's an hour's flight from Durban. Oh, okay. So
okay. Yeah, well, thank you. I just want a clarity here. Since now, two issues to my husband, that is this, we can stick to this, to the arrangement that we are already under right now, or else we can go up until Sunday. Then, I mean, up until Friday. Then Friday is covered. But then I just want to give that to members here to say, provisionally, well, I mean, it was arranged that it is, we'll be flying back all of us on Thursday.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, soon after. Then, I mean, if that application stands like that, then, I mean, that's the card that it is only to get. No, well, it's okay.
You see, it's subject to, that's why
yeah.
In life you should always have a plan B.
Subject to change.
So yeah. if the application has been approved now for the Friday, the Thursday and the Friday, we sleep over in Durban on Thursday, on Wednesday.
Thursday.
No, Wednesday. Because they...
On Thursday.
RBM, no.
Then we'll go to RBM.
No, Wednesday. We'll sleep over in Richards Bay on Wednesday. And Thursday. Friday morning or Thursday evening. Thursday afternoon. We can leave RBM around about 3.
And drive back to Durban.
Do you think that's possible?
Sleep in Durban.
And then we sleep in Durban so that we are there early in Durban in the morning to start with our program. And then we just tell RBM that we'll only spend the 4th with them and not the 6th. Early in the morning up until, say, from 7 up until 3. Is that possible, sir?
That's okay.
You see, so that we can start early in Durban at the refineries.
On Friday.
Hmm?
On Friday.
On Friday, yeah. So that we can leave early because there's also members that need to go home. Some of them has got some wedding vows to renew and...
I'm so lost in Durban, I don't even need accommodation in Durban. You don't have to book for me.
Oh, then we can say it.
But I heard that, your son and Chen, Adam and myself, the four of us. Great.
No, which means we are booking the hotel in Devon,
No, that's fine. Let's wait for 3 o'clock and Monday.
Okay. And then we will have
the okay. Yeah. Mr. Chair, we will now close this meeting so that then we can start. Then we can start. I'm having a teaching together.
We're thinking we'll share the minute and finalize the
I think Honorable Chen has got a challenge here because she's also on the Southern Committee, going to the Eastern Cape Steering Committee now. They'll be leaving, they'll be leaving Eastern Cape on Monday at 2. So they must book you to Durban.
How far?
No, Mtata Airport, quite far from where they are.
Yeah, it's far.
It's very far from where they
are. I'm not to fly.
They need to book you either.
From here to Durban?
Yeah.
Is there not a flight to Richards Bay?
There is a flight
from Joburg.
Islander hotel is over together.
Yeah, but then she has to drive back to London. Unless you come via Joburg. Durban or Richards Bay. Where are we staying in Richards Bay now?
We'll be staying in St. Lucia in Richards Bay. First arrival, we stay in St. Lucia. Then we move on to Richards Bay.
I don't support Richard Seymour. The flight was so small. And they usually don't land in Richard Seymour. They have to go back to the other.
Go to Joburg 7.
Yeah, better.
Yeah. But I think Supeka and Grace will liaise with you. And then Supeka and Grace just need to arrange transport for Honorable Chen to meet up with us on Monday. Thank you very much, Chen.
Thank you.
Excuse me, I need to go and do some negotiations.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm trying, but I think I've lost my touch.
No, you don't
know.
That's my charm.
Yeah.
You have.
I'm going to be out and
get a trip. Welcome back, your charm. I think you look at it.
I'm going to take a look at it.